1996, Manchester had a city centre population of like 1,000 people.
I think in the 80s we had a couple of hundred, and I think we've got close to 60,000 now. When we first envisaged what Aviva Studios could be, it started out as quite a different concept.
You wouldn't be designing to keep something the same for many amount of years. Really, you want to design something that is constantly changing.
We have a unique piece of technology designed to try and give people confidence that they're moving in with like-minded people.
If you're going to build somewhere, or develop somewhere, or create a community, what is the story around that place? That's the first thing I think people should be addressing.
Welcome, I'm Tanya Grady and you're listening to the next edition of Foundations, recorded live from Campfield Studios in central Manchester, a next generation campus for the technology and creative industries. Foundations is a celebration of bold beginnings, brave ideas and the people who make them possible. And in this episode, Making the Place, we'll be taking a deep dive into one of the most ambitious urban developments in the UK, St John's, Manchester. More than just a property development, St John's is a living blueprint for how cities can build environments that support culture, creativity, and community all at once. So from civic vision to commercial strategy to the lived reality of its residents, this panel brings together the people who have shaped and continue to shape St John's into a connected district of culture, enterprise, and living. So let's meet our panelists. I feel very professional in this chair, by the way. Right, so Pat Bartoli, the legend, Director of City Centre Growth and Infrastructure at Manchester City Council, whose leadership has been central in setting the long-term civic and cultural vision for the area. Pat was instrumental in securing strategic investment in culture and championed the creation of Aviva Studios, which now stands as a major cultural anchor, not only for the district, but for the entire city. Her work ensures that the culture is not just an afterthought in urban growth, but central to it. And we've got Russell Hayes joining us, Director of Residential at Union, a next generation living concept built around co-living, shared experiences and cultural integration. Union is redefining what it means to live in a city, offering not just a place to stay, but a way to connect. With curated programming, shared spaces and embedded creative partnerships, Union reflects a new model of urban life where home is part of a broader creative network. Russell brings critical insight into how residents shape and are shaped by the cultural ecosystem of St John's. And finally, last but not least, Jack Ingle, Commercial Creative Director at Allied London, the developer behind St John's. Jack leads the cultural strategy for the district, focusing on how space is curated, not just constructed, to allow culture and commerce to meaningfully coexist. Jack works at the intersection of design and long-term placemaking. So together, they'll help us unpack how to make a place and not just build it. So Pat.
Yes.
Hello. Hi. So Pat, St John's began as a bold public-private sector vision, but it needed civic backing to become what it is today. From your perspective at the city, what convinced you that this was the kind of cultural investment Manchester should get behind? And what does meaningful public support look like in a partnership like this?
So when we first envisaged what Aviva Studios could be, it started out as quite a different concept. And it went through quite a few evolutions before we determined that it should be a multi-purpose arts venue. And part of that approach was to ensure, one, it would have long-term viability. It could include different forms of art at the same time and have a multi-purpose use. But we also wanted it to be something that was fairly unique. There was nothing else like it in the city or even in the region. And I'd be so bold as to say probably not even in the country. And it was really important to us that we held on to that vision of what this multi-purpose venue could be. But one of the key drivers behind the whole venture was to ensure that we had a very publicly accessible arts venue, that anybody in the community would feel it was for them, that they could come at any time, participate in the work or just go into the building, and see it as a cultural facility for the people of Manchester and beyond. That was the driver behind it, and we maintain that vision and drive all throughout its evolution. What was the second question?
You absolutely have. But is it true that it's the biggest investment by central government in a cultural venue since the Tate Modern? Was that in 2000?
It's probably up there.
Yeah. It's amazing. That's incredible for the city, for the north.
Well, yeah, it is quite amazing, actually, and we were quite lucky. When it started out, we didn't think it would quite reach the cost that it would, that it did in the end, but it was well worth it, I think, for the you know, unique venue that it is today. So, yes, it probably is up there amongst one of the most heavily invested institutions.
It's amazing, Pat. Congratulations.
Team effort. Wasn't just me. The whole team of people, including Allied London, who were involved in the early stages of its evolution. So, yeah, massive team effort.
Oh, humble as well and modest. She's got it all. She's got it all, ladies and gentlemen. So, Russ, uni isn't just housing. It's a co-living model deeply connected to its cultural surroundings. What kind of resident or lifestyle were you designing for?
Yeah. So, Union really is reinventing what a residential model looks like, I think. It takes a lot of the current challenges that I think some most typical residential buildings have, such as the financial independence of a union doesn't exist in a normal rental accommodation. You go and rent a three-bedroom apartment in a normal building in the city, you move in with two friends, one of those friends disappears, all of a sudden two of you are left carrying the mantle for that rental, another one of you moves away, equally you left one person then to carry what is a massive rent. So Union's very unique in the fact that it's modelled to be rent by the room, essentially. And that just gives people this financial independence to be able to manage their expenses, move in, know exactly what they're paying, and that's the way of it. Union's designed also to be attainable. I think Manchester City Centre has gone on such an incredible growth curve. And I suppose one of the small downsides is that that has made accommodation very expensive for a lot of people. So Union's designed to come in and offer an attainable rental solution, but still be able to give people that connection to the city centre and really allow those people to just thrive. And we quite often talk about it being a building that's connected, and you look at Union's website, it's all about connections, be it people, be it the building itself, be it St John's, whatever it might be. But I think at the same time, it's those people who are just getting started. And that can be getting started in the way of, I've just left university and I'm going to start my new job. Or it can actually just be people who are brand new to the city, who might not have friends to be able to move in with. So that's the really unique thing that I think Union offers, and having it in a place like St John's is another great tick for that building from our perspective.
Absolutely. It's a mega progressive model, isn't it? I mean, for us as well, I think to talk about a bit about, I guess, the talent in St John's and who we want to talk to, that type of model fits perfectly because, like you say, it offers a soft landing to kind of new people and new talent that are moving into the city. And then, like you say, it allows for ultra flexibility. If you were to move in with some friends and someone moves out, you're not burdened with the whole rent. It just allows for you to kind of be hyper flexible with like where you stay, which is really interesting.
Does the model take quite a lot of educating for your tenants and for your customers? Because it's quite, the co-living sort of thing is quite new, and obviously it's not very traditional. Is it quickly taken up when you open the doors, and is there a waiting list, or how does it really work?
Yeah, I think so. We launched the first building of 870 beds on the 2nd of Feb 2024. We had planned to hopefully fill it within 10 months. which was still quite aggressive, but we actually filled it in 8. So I think the way it works has just given people that ability. There's all kinds of incredible stories of people and couples and whoever they might be, or people from all different walks of life who've been able to come back to the city now that that sub £1,000 rental price category has opened up.
Yeah. Because I think sort of, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but sort of 8-10 years ago, there wasn't a huge population that actually lived in the centre of Manchester.
Yeah.
A lot of it was on the outside. So I was just keen to understand, because I think one thing in St. John's is having a living presence and a presence of people who are residential there has been a part of a lot of conversations when it comes to getting operators into the district and their appetite to be there. You know, they want to be, they're looking for a market that goes from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m., not just something that's 5 days a week and is between 5 p.m. and 7 p.m. So, yeah, I was interested to understand what's been the residential curve with Manchester's growth. Has there been a residential growth as well in the centre of town and where people are residing now?
Yeah, I mean, residential growth has gone massive. You're absolutely right, Jack. There's some alarming stat, which I'm going to forget now, but something like 1996, Manchester had a city centre population of like 1,000 people,
yeah,
or maybe even less. I can't remember what it was. Absolutely bonkers.
It was pretty small. I think in the 80s, we had a couple of hundred people living here, and I think we've got close to 60,000 now.
Yeah.
So absolutely huge growth in the population, and it's mainly very young people who are moving into the city centre. So having different types of tenure and offers for them is really important.
It's the accessibility that still comes with the luxury as well, doesn't it? That's kind of what Union does. You get that accessibly priced living, but you're still in a really nice place. It's still really secure, 100%. It's clean, it's serviced.
Yeah, you've got nothing that any other build-to-rent building in the city or some of the amazing towers that are popping up in our city. It still has all the things to offer that has, but you have this new independent way of living and this sociable way of living as well, where you can meet new people and you're encouraged to get out there.
Yeah.
But I think you're absolutely right about operators as well. And for me, that was always one of the key things as Spinningfields grew.
Yeah.
It always seemed to be a location that was busy all the time.
Mm.
It didn't have that Canary Wharf feel where years ago, when, I think it's a bit busier now, but when you went to Canary Wharf 10 years ago, if you went on a Friday night or a Saturday morning, there was no one there.
Yeah.
And I think Spinningfields set that tone for how you can, by getting good operators in, of being able to say, we can make this place busy all the time.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. It's been a topic of a lot of discussions about this being a sort of 16-hour location during the day, and that's why in Spinningfields recently, I mean, we've seen a huge uptake in activations as everything goes online. A lot of brands want to activate and be in person and connect with their audience because there's so many brands who are purely sort of e-commerce or purely based online. So they come and they just occupy sort of public realm space. But they'll come, they love it because they have the ability to be there from Sunday until the following Sunday. They don't have to, they're not paying a day rate, but they're only getting 4 hours of footfall, which has been a big selling point for us. And when you have that, I think we're top 15 highest footfall leisure districts in the UK, leisure and retail districts in the UK, and, including London and everywhere else. And I think a huge part of that is because a footfall continually comes through between 8 a.m. and whatever it is, 9 p.m, 10 p.m. And again, I think when we looked at St. John's, having residents there was something that that's something you want to take over and put in there, and having a residential presence means you deal with that footfall through all times of day.
Yeah, there's 1,670 beds in there. So there will be, in the next few months, 1,670 people that are living and choosing St. John's as a place to live and enjoying everything else it has to offer.
Yeah.
Amazing. And I guess you've kind of touched on it a little bit there, Jack, around intentional design and curation of a place to attract people and to ensure that people interact with it in that way. But when it comes to curating a new place like St. John's, with it being a brand new district, how can you make something feel lived in and authentic from day one?
Yeah.
As rather than it just being polished and impressive, how do you make it feel more kind of authentic, not manufactured, I guess?
I think that probably started a bit before my time. I think when St. John's was getting overhauled and redeveloped, you kind of create a story around it. You create a story around the development. I mean, St. John's is the neighbourhood, but the development initiative is Enterprise City, which is, culture, living and entertainment. And that vision was created and curated, and then it was taken to people and it was sold to them, and people either liked it or they didn't like it, and the people who did like it, they bought into it. And that's why you're left with tenants like Cloud Imperium Games or Booking.com, Sir House, Union, WPP and the Viva Studios. Those people bought into it. They kind of brought the industry to the location, and that gave it an authenticity, because it meant that we weren't just, you know, it wasn't a block of high-rise buildings that you then you just said, okay, let's fill it from the ground floor up, put a few cool operators in there and get it going. It had a story, and that story provided anchor tenants. Those anchor tenants provided industry. Those industries require employees and generally will often have audiences. And then once you have that foundation, you know, of course, things stall and developments change, and you can lose that vision along the way, but at least then with every asset you build, there's an overarching vision there, there's a story there you need to adhere to that people enjoy and they've bought into. And I guess you don't want to, it's quite difficult not to stray away from that story, from the original thing. It's difficult not to get distracted with a new trend. AI has popped up since we started, you know, it was never around when St. John started, so you kind of have to adopt it and manage that. But I think having a vision, having a story, gives it authenticity, because people understand what they're buying into and they understand what it's trying to be.
And then I guess building an estate that's flexible so that you can kind of answer kind of moving, a fast-paced kind of moving industry and kind of changing demand, which it naturally does. So it's like flexible cultural venue, hyper-flexible cultural venue that can cater to anything, hyper-flexible living, and then flexible kind of commerce and like community as well. So, and we've touched on this a little bit already, Ross, but as Union isn't just housing, it's like a co-living model kind of deeply connected to its cultural surroundings. What kind of resident or lifestyle were you designing for?
I think probably similar to what Pat was saying about Aviva, really, and that's journey. We wanted a building where it didn't have a certain type of person in it. And I think I found myself deep diving into our residents prior to this yesterday afternoon, just trying to take a look and see if there were any nuggets of information, and I could walk away from that going, yeah, I definitely know it's this particular type of person, and it's not. And I actually think that that's categorically what makes it. It doesn't necessarily make everybody fit into one slot. And I was looking down some of the titles of people that are in there, and there's CEOs, there's CFOs, there's casino dealers, which have a posher name, which I can't remember the name of. But there's bartenders, there's sous chefs, there's paralegals, there's loads of creators, loads of creatives as well. So we really just, what the typical demographic we did know we wanted to go for was the people who maybe prior to Union couldn't get into the city centre anymore, because it was now much more expensive than it was 5 years prior.
It's unaffordable, essentially. So you'd say age range, typically?
Average age for the building is, that's one thing I did manage to nail on, is 27.
27?
Yeah.
27. So, Jack, how do you make a district feel cohesive when it's been delivered in phases by different partners and teams? Because obviously we're all completely different stakeholders. So yeah. It's like, how do you tie that all together, mesh it together so it feels intentional, I guess, and it's considered?
Yeah, I think you mentioned it earlier about not over-designing and not over-concepting. You know, that enterprise city story that I mentioned, that culture, living and entertainment, that gives you sort of guidelines. I don't think cohesion is necessarily something we're really, really striving for. There's quite a lot of places that I like that don't have any cohesion really at all in their operators. Or if you look at them, if you go to sort of places like, I guess, New York, and you go to Williamsburg and Brooklyn, it's so random, the variety there. It kind of makes it what it is, and it makes the personalities what it is. But there are different phases, different operators. And I think as long as you look at it in little sections, I mean, we looked at it, if you look at ABC as an example, that's something that probably finished a bit earlier than the other properties in the district. You just have to treat that asset as its own thing, and it has to be, you know, in line and on brand as its own thing, and you try and curate that with complementary tenants. And once it is finished and it's its own small cluster, if the asset next door, you know, is the next phase and that becomes developed, as long as you've made that one complementary and on brand, then the next one follows suit. They're all going to have some sort of cohesion. They're all still within that that ethos and those principles that you marked out from the start. Again, it's a bit like I said earlier, as long as you don't get distracted and you stay on task. And, you know, people often want to change things. I think we've had a lot of meetings where things have changed a million times. And then you eventually end up on the first idea you had after sort of 6 weeks of work. That's happened quite a lot. And I think that's always because your original vision was probably the best one, because it was probably the one that was aligned to the previous project and has the most cohesion and makes the most sense.
Yeah.
I think just to add to that, I think one of the things that has really worked for St. John's is building on the historical kind of offer in the area, the uniqueness of the surrounding structures, the railway arches, the museum, but also building Enterprise City around the studios that were already here and the bonded warehouse. Yeah. That was really the hook that started the evolution of Enterprise City and what that could be, and then the further development. But I think you're right, Jack. It's how that then came together. Wasn't necessarily a cohesive piece, but they all reflected that historical and heritage that this site, it has got in spades.
I think when you mentioned earlier the question about authenticity and things not looking new, probably one thing that helped St. John's was that it's not all completely new. OGS, Old Granada Studios, has been redeveloped and refurbished, and now it's Versa Studios, and it's, you know, one of the highest tech spec studios, TV studios in the country. And then you look at Bonded Warehouse, which houses the Exchange that Tanya leads, and you've got one of the, you know, probably one of the most varied tenant mixes and corporate office tenant mixes in the city. Incredibly well-designed space, and it's in an iconic building that people know. And then that houses, you're taking, it's not a new building, it's not a glass building that's been chucked up, which again helps with that authenticity and that cohesion, like you said. And people, it's not a foreign object when people go down there. It fits in the museum and science industry. It fits, the tenants really fit with Aviva Studios. We've got recording studios in Bonded Warehouse. There's 6 production studios, which are housed by TikTok. You know, it's got all of these elements that are quite modern, but still in a really, really sort of old heritage building.
It's got a lot to live up to, St. John's, as well, hasn't it? So it played like a pivotal role in the Industrial Revolution. Then it was like the biggest like entertainment kind of centre of the north, with it being Old Granada. So we had a lot to live up to in terms of kind of what we wanted to deliver and the ambitions around it, didn't we?
And initially, we still called it the OGS, and we ran a few placemaking initiatives in there that led to performances from sort of Kendrick Lamar with Reebok and Skepta, and we held that mini festival called The Weekender, which we're actually bringing back to Canfield. And those sorts of things, again, even once it was sold, you still keep the use moving, and you try and, when development's happening, you try and keep it active. So it's not just a building site all the time. Obviously, COVID didn't help. But pre that, there is still trying to run that story, trying to run that narrative the whole time, that we want to be local, we want to be full of independence, we want to have a bit of a community here that isn't brand new.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know we kind of touched on this before, Pat, in terms of Aviva Studios being kind of a huge public commitment, not just financially, but symbolically, really, putting culture in the heart of Manchester's future, essentially. So strategic investment in culture can often be quite a tough political sell. What was key to making the case for prioritising it in this development, would you say?
I think the City Council has always taken the view that culture is an absolute key part, the evolution of the city and its growth. It's central to job creation, it's central to business growth, as well as being, obviously, of itself, an important part of city life. I mean, the city is built on lots of cultural activity. So we've always taken the view that it's hugely important to invest in culture and cultural institutions. That's been at the heart of the city. And I think that is widely recognised as well. You know, it can help with skill development. And Aviva Studio is a good case in point, because we've got the Factory Academy there. And I think currently there's been about 15,000 people that have gone through the academy, learnt different skills. And it's not just skills that are around creativity in the sense of performance, but also making things, the technical side of skills, logistics. So there's a whole range of areas that people can develop their skills in, and that's been hugely important. And lots of our young residents have said how important it's been to help them develop the confidence to then go on to find jobs and develop their careers.
Yeah, it's massively interdisciplinary, isn't it, in terms of the talent development?
Absolutely, hugely.
And also the type of shows that Aviva attracts, it's amazing exposure for that type of talent as well, isn't it? With it being such an incredible venue.
Absolutely, very, very varied. And obviously we have the biannual festival this year, and that likes to showcase new material that's never been seen before. And that absolutely put the city and the festival on the map. You know, it's got huge international acclaim for quite a lot of its productions. They then tour the world after they've been shown at Aviva.
So that's Manchester International Festival, the Operators Factory International, and the venues of Aviva Studios, just to make sure everyone's aware of that kind of situation and all the names. Is that right?
Yeah, that is right. But
we love a brand too, Pat and I, don't we, Jack?
As many brands as possible, as confusing as possible, as best way.
Yeah, just to keep everyone on the toes.
Yeah, you have to be determined to see a show there.
So, Russ, so we've just been, I guess, talking about like the culture that we've kind of invested in St John's. And when it comes to, I guess, designing a home, which is what you guys have done with Union, like how do you do so that invites people out of their private space and into more of a community life? Especially with your kind of programming and stuff that you've introduced, which makes it a super kind of community-led and social environment.
Yeah, I think that starts from a quite a unique place, I think, in terms of encouraging people out of their private space, as you say, starts from almost the beginning of the rental journey when it comes to Union. And the reason for that is, for people going into our sharing accommodation, we have a unique piece of technology which we call Smart Match. And Smart Match is designed to try and give people confidence that they're moving in with like-minded people. And that comes across a load of different things. It's a mega piece of technology, and I think it's been really helpful in filling the building as quickly as we have done. But it looks at sociability, cleanliness, thoughtfulness, and then it takes into account age, another bits of, and also shift patterns, which can be key as well. So the reason I mention that is because I think that gives people the confidence when they do first move into that shared accommodation, say in one of the 2, 3 or 4 bedroom shared rooms, they have the confidence of knowing that any other people who are already living in that space, they should be like-minded with in some way. So that kind of encourages them out. In terms of the actual design of the space, I think it then comes down to, you know, super comfy sofas, simple things, but it just means that people want to sit on them more, come out of their private space, put a TV on the wall, good thing to sit around, dining tables. It's amazing how many of our residents, although at a time when they move in, they are technically strangers, they still sit down for dinner every night together. Which is a really nice story for us to be able to hear. The next level to that is then getting them, say, they've gone out of their room, they're now in the living accommodation, it's getting them out of the living accommodation and into the amenities. So I think amenity, quite simple, you just put a fantastic bar, serve great coffee, do great deals for people, bring them downstairs so that they can literally come downstairs for a beer and a pizza, or they can come down first thing before they head to work and grab a coffee and a pastry and look after them for doing that because they're a resident. Give them some of the best co-work space in the city that's actually in their own building, which again means that they're encouraged out of there. And I quite often think about, we have laundry rooms in Union, which is quite unique. But obviously space is as a premium, as it's a co-living product. But actually, these laundry rooms are quite akin to the old school laundrettes. When you think back, I don't think it happens quite as much these days, but the old laundrettes that would be in towns, cities, villages, whatever, really, really sociable places to be. You'd go down there at a certain time of day, maybe it's a routine, you meet people, you start chatting. I think all of these different areas are what connect people in Union. So you can see how it flows from the room into the living space and then into the amenity. And then, of course, the next part after that is the wider Enterprise City St John's connection.
It's actually really interesting with the app that you guys have designed, because you may not know exactly, like, the typical demographic is industry and kind of like job type and things like that and shift patterns like you mentioned before, but you actually know the personality type of your residents, and that's how you match them, which is like you go into like another level, aren't you, in terms of ensuring you get the right people together.
How do you find out their personality type? How do you find out their cleanliness and stuff like that?
Well, it relies on a certain amount of honesty, Jack.
Right.
which of course it does, but I think ultimately
I was getting concerned there was some sort of data in my bedroom or something checking on my cleanliness.
Yeah, well, that as well.
So Jack, St John's blends creative industries with tech, media, hospitality and residential life really neatly. How do you design them for kind of overlap so it's not just like coexisting with one another?
Yeah. Again, I think just not over concepting a space, not over designing it and not over building it, and doing it in phases really helps. We do a lot in phases. You know, if you looked around St John's now, it could look a bit patchy. We've got, or at least maybe a year ago, it would look quite patchy and people would say there's a bit of a building site. I think Phoenix was open. I don't think Caravan was. I don't think Trading Route was. I think we'd opened Courts Club ourselves, which is this sort of basketball, lawn, bar, club sort of concept that we just took that as a sort of landscaping opportunity to turn it into an activation. So you just have to respond, and things change really, really quickly, and certain things are really, really popular that people take up and certain things aren't. And if you were to build everything at once, design all at once, concept at once, and just drop it down, you know, half of that might fail, at which point they really don't have any complementary aspects and they do end up just sort of coexisting and things might end up vacant. So, you know, we've built it in stages, intentionally or not, I don't really know, but it's worked. And we've ended up with Courts Club, and we've ended up with Phoenix, which is a bit more of a high-end evening venue. Then we've got Caravan, which is all day. Trading Route is a bit more of a brewery. And we just opened the Stables Tavern, which is a sort of, we've taken the old Rover's Return, actually, and redeveloped that and opened it, which has been a really, really big success. And again, you know, we opened that in time for summer. That's opposite Trading Route and Caravans. That's created a small little cluster. It's kind of good to have quite a neighbourhood feel. It's all based around a courtyard and around a square, which is thought about. And then hopefully Grape Street, which is the street Stables Tavern is on, is going to be activated before the end of the summer. And then you've got a little cluster in the middle of this little town, this little district that works. And when people go in there, they understand it. So, yeah, I think as long as you don't... I think we wanted to avoid, yeah, just building everything at once and then trying to let it and ending up with, you know, not a lot of interest, because actually things have changed in the 3 years or 4 years it takes you to develop something.
And I think, like you just touched on, it's key that you're reactive. So you listen to the market, I guess, and then you can pivot and change the concept and ensure that it kind of suits the demand.
Absolutely. I mean, even when Manchester Goods Yard, we filled that with Booking.com and Cloud Imperium, the reason for Courts Club is because the tenants there wanted someone they could go downstairs and have a drink after work or meet people and not have to just, you know, walk 10 minutes just to get to the next place. So when you hear that feedback, it gives you a bit of urgency and also a bit of certainty to invest in that place and spend the money, because you know it's going to be viable. And viability is a huge part of it as well. You know, you have to make sure each stage, although it's part of a bigger picture, everything in itself has to be viable, otherwise it's not sustainable. So there is an element that we need to be able to run feasibilities and make sure these things work. And we run a lot of feasibilities and we check a lot of things and trial a lot of things. And when the time is right, it's usually pretty obvious. And at that point, it's usually pretty complementary to the rest of the estate and the tenants and the residents within it.
Thank you. So on to the final few questions now. Pat, this is quite a big question, actually. Are there things you now wish you'd done differently at the outset of the St John's journey, not to put you in an awkward position, put you on the spot?
We didn't do ourselves much favours by deciding to build Aviva Studios right next to a live railway line and arches and... lots of structures that made it very difficult to actually get the building built. But now it's here, I think we made absolutely the right decision, putting it where it is. I think it works perfectly next to the river with the backdrop of the arches and the rest of St. John's. So, yeah, it was a bit of a tumultuous journey, but we got there in the end. And I think it's all come together. So, no.
You won't change a thing. Amazing. Well,
I'm prepared to share.
You know, it's really interesting you're talking about like the interconnectivity of the estate before, but those listed arches are shared by the museum, Bonded, and Aviva Studios, aren't they? Which kind of gives you an idea from a design perspective in terms of like how everything within the estate is interwoven together really neatly. And it's very considered, but a nightmare as well. And you know, I guess you work with us on Campfield as well. Now we're here, it's probably worth touching on. Pat also led on this amazing Campfield campus with us, which is another really amazing example of that kind of public-private sector relationships. And that was Grade 2 listed, historic kind of... That's,
yeah.
Yeah.
So we like giving ourselves hard jobs to do. I think what we envisaged with the Campfield buildings has been realised, but beyond that, it looks so spectacular. I don't think when we started out on this journey, we'd expected it to look quite so brilliant, really. I mean, we were very fortunate that we got Levelling Up funding to help us deliver it. We've got a fantastic team working on it, both the City Council team and the Allied team, which helped enormously. But just seeing the vision of what we could achieve is just mind-blowing, really. I think it just absolutely sets the standard for what we can achieve when we really put our mind to it.
Absolutely. So then these are a couple of questions to kind of all panellists, so just feel free to kind of jump in. Would you say it's possible to future-proof cultural infrastructure? I know we kind of touched on that before in terms of making something super flexible, but would you say that every place eventually needs reinvention?
I would say you have to make a space that just isn't too rigid. I think you can't just say categorically we'll always work as it was then. But I think culture is dynamic, right? So it moves and it changes. And I think if you have flexible space, it's a bit like you were talking about here with these, you don't want to be too wedded to one particular use type. I think you can end up with spaces that do work and do have a very long-term goal, but in order to do that, they just need to have an element of flex to be able to move with technologies and social side of things and culture as well.
Absolutely. I guess the industries that we're targeting, digital and creative, are so fast-paced that if you build anything too inflexible or rigid in 6 months' time, it's out of date.
I think the only certain thing we have in life is that there will be change. And I think having that flexibility to respond to change is key to future success, really. So, yeah, we've got AI, you know, that will start to shape how and in what way we do things. That might have a big impact on how our buildings function and the form of buildings. You know, who knows what might happen with that in the future. But I think being open to that change and being responsive to it is the key to, you know, maximising the opportunity.
I think some of those changes are pretty welcomed, and any would say you wouldn't be designing to keep something the same for many amount of years. Really, you want to design something that is constantly changing, because then it's constantly relevant and people are always interested in it, and it gives you the opportunity, if it is hard to change, to do something clever, to do something smart, to make something out of the most of it. You know, this building as an example, people probably looked at this building for a long time and thought, that's what we're going to do with that building, we can't change it, it would cost too much. And eventually the opportunity comes and you have the chance. I think this was originally earmarked, why don't we make this, probably a lot of people are thinking, why don't we make this a massive food hall? But how many food halls are there now in the city, and how many are coming along? And is that really the most sustainable and the most impactful use for this building? Or are we going to house an incubator in here, which is going to foster, you know, opportunity for young companies and for growing companies? And is it going to be a national success that maybe not will invite further investment for Manchester's economy, for the tech and for the creative and for the media companies that, you know, are struggling and trying and you know, competing in the city.
Absolutely. And ensuring that you design stuff that, I guess, complements one another. So this forms part, this is Campfield Studios, and it forms part of the wider campus. And I'd say Campfield Studios, the inventory in this building, absolutely complements the inventory that we've introduced into Campfield, which is like the lower campus building. And I guess with the digital and creative industries, you just have to ensure that the type of inventory you've designed is kind of connected and, like you said, Jack, relevant.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even if you're looking in here, I mean, a lot of the offices don't really have ceilings in them. You're in them sitting in a massive atrium hall, which right now you probably couldn't identify a really clear revenue stream for the space we're sitting in. But we're here recording a podcast, and next week someone here might be having a big banquet, and the week after someone might be using it as a sort of showroom for vehicles or whatever. It is open, but there is an underlying purpose for it, and it has been thought about. Just, I guess, you need to be comfortable with a little bit of uncertainty in that respect.
High risk, high reward.
Maybe.
So what lessons from St John's might apply to future creative districts across other cities, would you say?
I think understanding the assets that you're working with, to start with, understanding how they might be put to best use, having an innovative idea and a creative idea for what you want to do with the places and spaces you're working with, I think is key to making successful spaces. And you know, place shaping is quite a difficult thing. And I think you have to think very creatively about what the people you bring together, how you then use the space and what you put in that space to make it work.
And on top of that as well, I think if you're going to build somewhere or develop somewhere or create a community, what is the story around that place? Why do people want to come there, and why do they want to be part of it? You know, that's the first thing I think people should be addressing. And I think we haven't mentioned that Enterprise City story for a while, but it is something that a lot of people bought into. And it obviously resonated with a huge audience. And now the majority of our buildings are filled with tech, media or creative businesses. And there's, of course, there can be buildings that are filled with a variety of tenants, but there are some as well that are amazing buildings, amazing spaces, and they're not full at all. And I think that is because they haven't got something that resonates with them. They haven't got an identity. So I think if someone is going to build something and build a place, you know, give it a purpose, give it a story, and give it a reason that people want to be there, live there, work there, and be around it.
Community definitely feels key, doesn't it, to all of these different pieces in tying it all together. And say, like, in, say, 5 years from now, Jack, this is probably a good question for you. What does success look like for St John's, not just in metrics, but in feel?
Locality would be really, really, really cool if it felt like a really local, proper neighbourhood that was part of Manchester, that had been there for a long time, that had operators that were all trading really successfully in a place that was busy 7 days a week and, you know, throughout the whole day. That would be very, very successful for us. I mean, if we create a place where people see it as an opportunity, they can go there and they want to be there. I mean, if you looked at sort of Northern Quarter, I think people consider that a location. They can go and try something, and or they can go and attend something, or they can go and be there for the weekend or for the day, for 2 days. If we can create that kind of locality and that kind of identity, not to be like it, we'll do it in our own way. And we will create, I think, a really cool mix of tenants and people and an amazing audience there. But if it can feel like somewhere you want to be and you want to be part of it because it has that local feel of independence mixed with sort of national brands that want to be there for the Manchester audience as well, then we'd be pretty happy with that, I think.
Absolutely. Amazing. So final question to close us out. What's the most important ingredient in truly making a place, not just building it?
The people. Absolutely, every day of the week. And I go back to the point I made about Aviva Studios and me wanting it to be for every single person that lives in this or works in this city. The people make it what it is. They make it vibrant. They make it interesting. And you know, if they get value out of it, if they get a good cultural experience out of it, even better.
I think as well that the operators is key. I agree that people are the leading one, but I think operators, and I think already in St John's, the people that are the operators that are in there now, there's so much diversity, not in terms of just how it looks. You know, I think we all hold Spinning Fields as super successful, but actually St John's is like a new improved version of that, where there is, you know, buildings that are listed, buildings that are completely brand new and a stereotypical skyscraper, buildings that are unbelievably cultural and unique in design. And then you've got operators coming in. You've got something like Jack said, Stables Tavern. I went in there last week. I knew I was going to love it. I did love it. It was nice. And it just, but it feels like a local pub. And I don't think, you know, it's quite hard probably to create a brand new space, a master planned area like St John's, and go, how can we make a pub feel local? And it actually did. You know, Caravan, amazing. Phoenix, amazing. All those guys. But that pub, as small as it was, all of a sudden just seems to be bringing people en masse. And again, those people seem to be from all different walks of life. So for me, that, what does it look like in 5 years' success? It absolutely seems like it's on track for that at the moment. When you walk through there, you can walk through at 8 a.m, 7 a.m, and there's already people starting to dart here, there and everywhere. You can walk back through at 10 p.m. and there's still people outside all the bars and restaurants. Nice weather helps, but
yeah, summer helps. And I think those people, those operators obviously are the people as well. I mean, I've had a few conversations where actually we got down the line and with people, and then we decided actually this person probably not a great fit. The things they're talking about and the things they want to do probably not going to make their neighbour very happy, or they're not going to make the city very happy, or they're not going to really bring what we want to this place. So, you know, I agree with both, but I think the people behind the operations and the people who are going there is huge. And I think flexibility as well. A lot of the places that I see and that I like, and cities around the world that I really like, there seems to be an ease for the people in that city to give it an identity, to take space, take ownership and apply their personality to it. You know, whether it be the way they design a space or the way they operate it or the personality they put on it. You know, if it's flexible, it brings in so many characters. And the more characters you have, the more personality a place has, which I think is really cool.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. Thank you so much to our incredible panellists, and thank you so much for listening to Foundations, a celebration of bold beginnings, brave ideas, and the people who make them possible. If you like what you've heard, please remember to subscribe to Foundations on wherever you get your podcasts, and follow at Campfield MCR on both Instagram and LinkedIn for more information on future episodes and all the great events we've had happening here at Campfield. See you soon. You've been listening to Foundations, a celebration of bold beginnings, brave ideas, and the people who make them possible. Remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts for the latest episodes, and follow at Campfield MCR on Instagram.